This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress. From connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Hello and welcome to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino, and I'm joined here with my co-host, the only man YouTuber Jake Paul is afraid to square up with in the ring, Jason Calcanis. How's it going?
It's going well. It's going well.
There we go. And we also have a very special co-host with us,
yes,
the undisputed WWE champion, Sonny Madra. In all seriousness, Sonny is the vice president of Ford X. Thanks for joining us today, Sonny.
Oh, thanks for having me back again. It's been a while. Excited.
Yeah, no, we're excited too. But before we get started real quick, I just want to ask you something, Jason. What are you doing on April 29th? Do you have any plans?
April 29th. I don't know. Maybe we should host something.
Yeah. How about this event called The Future of Transportation?
There it is.
Totally virtual, happening at 11 o'clock a.m. We'll be hearing from some of the top companies that are pushing the envelope to what's possible in the transportation space. To register, be sure to visit events.inside.com. And did I mention it's free?
It's free. For our listeners and email. Yeah, we started an events business at Inside, and we're going to do monthly events about transportation, venture capital, AI, and everything else. And I understand we got Justin from Joby Aviation coming. So that's coming.
Yes, Justin Lang from Joby. And a friend of yours, Sonny, Ben Baer, Chief Business Officer for Spin.
Amazing.
Which is actually a division of Ford. So if you guys want to join us, events.inside.com, but we'll go on and continue with the show now. When we first spoke to Sonny in June 2020, which is around the time we started this podcast, we were all locked down, and we were a few months into the pandemic, and we were discussing the impact that COVID had on transportation. So at the time, some transportation systems had seen up to a 97% drop in ridership. Scooter sharing companies removed vehicles from the streets, except for Spin. And the CDC recommended that companies encourage employees to take methods of transportation that minimize close contacts with others, like driving solo to work, etc. Now we're a year removed from that situation. And as society's returning to normal, we're starting to see some of these transportation trends shift again. So for instance, the only form of organized transit that's returned to pre-pandemic levels in New York City has been City Bike. Ridership was actually 13%, was up 13% in December 2020 over pre-pandemic times. Rental cars are getting extremely difficult to book. Some users are reporting rates of up to $700 a day for a Kia. Quarter one 2020, car sales were up about 26% over quarter one 2020. Airline passenger volume is about back up to 50 to 80% of pre-pandemic levels. New York City subway ridership is about one third of its usual levels. This is while traffic is back to 50 to 80% from pre-pandemic levels in some markets. So sorry for the whole, drop of information there, but seeing some of these statistics, seeing how society is going back to normal, let's go around the horn here. We'll start with Sonny as the mobility expert. What mobility trends do you see fizzing out in 2021 as we go forward? What trends would you like to see continue? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I'll start with the continue. Like, I think, building on your comment on like the City Bike in New York, the other thing that's happened in New York is New York's also authorized like scooter sharing now. And so I think that's going to be sort of just continue on the micromobility trend. And, New York's was later to come there, but I think with their leadership and the size and scale of what happens there, I think that'll be really great. The other thing that I think you also commented on is sort of this notion of like car sharing. And I think, you know, because the rental fleets are an interesting situation, I think we're going to continue to see growth in car sharing. I don't have the stat off the top of my head, but I think Turo has been really kind of seeing a surge right now as well, sort of the peer-to-peer car sharing networks. And then, you know, I continue to think, while we're still, you know, we're getting on the, you know, I guess the tail end of sort of the lockdown pandemic, but I think we're still going to be in a situation with vaccinations and, you know, vaccine passports and, you know, however that plays out. I still think there's going to be a push for, you know, individual car ownership, but, you know, for people wanting to continue to do, you know, vacations and transportation within the country, because I think there'll still be a while before airline passenger volume gets back to 100%. You know, we saw United yesterday still come out and said that, you know, they're still suffering, and a lot of these businesses can't, you know, continue to operate, you know, in the type of volume that they're at. Those are the things that I think. But Jason, you know, I know you think about this all the time because you can't wait to get back on a plane.
Well, it's interesting. I am desperate to get moving and doing some fun stuff. I think international travel is going to be on hold for another 12 months. So I think we won't be talking about going to Italy or Spain or even Asia until maybe, you know, second quarter next year, first quarter next year. I think, you know, these passports and working out vaccines is going to take time. And obviously we're in the United States, the UK. Some countries are really, you know, getting there quickly with the vaccine, but other ones haven't even started yet, right? And the pandemic is going wild in India, sadly, and in South America and some other locations. So that trend, which, you know, Sunny kind of pointed to, the staycation or the nationalcation, staying in your own country, is going to be the trend, I think, for the rest of this year and into next year. And Cabana, which is the van, you know, company that I think you're invested in as well, Sunny.
Yep.
Cabana.life, you can go check it out. They have conversion vans, and they are, you know, I can't speak for the company, but I just got an update for them, and they are sold out and crushing it. So I'll just leave it at that.
Yeah.
And so you're going to have this combination of the YOLO moment in the United States, which is going to be June 1st to the 15th. I think we'll see, you know, deaths go down. Today, I was looking at the 7-day average, was under 800. And the cases have been flat. And then last week, we opened up the shots to everybody. Mm-hmm. And that's the, you know, the big change, obviously. And people are going to start going back to work. So I was talking to a venture capital firm today, and they're all going back to work on June 15th. In their office. They have vaccines being given at their office. So the vaccines are making their way to a surplus now. We have 60 million shots here in the United States on shelves. So let that sink in. And we're now at 60, 70% of people over the age of 65. And you know, it's obviously trickling down to the people who just got the green light. So it's going to be the YOLO of all YOLOs. People have saved a lot of money up by being in quarantine because they couldn't spend it. So you have a year of spending that's been backed up, plus the stimulus, plus this, you know, yearn for, you know, wanderlust. So I think it's going to be, people are going to be this summer driving and flying and doing everything. And that's kind of exciting.
Yeah,
I think people will be going back to work 3 days a week.
That's my prediction. Yes, that's what I was going to ask you, because I've seen a lot of companies shift to a hybrid model. And at the beginning of COVID, we saw a lot of people moving out of town, going to, I think we talked about it on this podcast, is Tahoe and some of these other destination cities, because they could just take their work with them. But obviously, we're going to see some of those transportation habits shift when you have to go back to the office, you know, 3 days a week. And you're probably going to be going in a personal vehicle, you know, somebody who may have been using public transit, they might be using a vehicle they purchased over this period, or maybe they'll consider micromobility. I mean, I feel like micromobility is here to stay. Sunny, you know, getting the perspective from Ford and, you know, some of the work you do, where do you kind of see micromobility evolving, right? Because we're all used to the version of micromobility that comes in the form of a shared bike or a kick scooter. But do you have any insights on where micromobility is kind of transforming as more consumers shift to it as a public transportation alternative?
Yeah, it's a really good question. You know, one of the things that micromobility enabled, and you can see it in San Francisco, and we touched on this in the early times, you know, when we did that, one of the first podcasts together, was, you know, cities have started to create a lot of dedicated infrastructure for micromobility. And I think what that's really enabling is the entrepreneurs to start kind of bringing different form factors. And, you know, my thinking is that dedicated space that's available, obviously, first and foremost, becomes available to cyclists and scooters. Yeah. But I think we're going to really start seeing in there, you know, if, I don't know if you've seen these cargo e-bikes. Have you guys seen these things? They're really, really spectacular for, you know, you can put your kids up front. You know, Jacob, yes. You got to get one of these. Have you seen these, Jason?
I'm looking at them right now. So you basically have a giant wagon on the back or
Or front, in fact.
Oh, on the front.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, they have them on the back and they have them on the front. And so basically you load your kids in there. It's e-bikes. You can go up and down hills and you can ride it down to the farmer's market and back. And so we're already starting. And then there's the version that Jason's talking about.
Rab
has the one that has the, you know, kind of on the back end where, you know, you can sit two or three kids on the back. And so, but, you know, even just looking at those two, you can already see the evolution in the form factor starting to come together. And, you know, there's some really, really great videos that are out there of, you know, people using these and putting their kids in there. And, you know, you get your exercise, you get your kids down to the farmer's market, you do it, you ride back home. You know, J-Cal, you got to get one of these for the family like this.
I'm looking at an Urban Arrow family electric cargo bike, and it's a giant bucket.
Yes.
It looks like a wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
With a, it's a combination. I'm looking at it in Wired magazine, and it's $5,000. Whoa. But that's cool. So you can just dump your kids into the bucket and just drive down to the farmer's market and throw some fruit and vegetables on top of them. That is brilliant.
Yes, dump your kids into the bucket.
It's literally like, and it's really, I mean, it's a big device, but wow, those are cool. And you know, they're going to keep certain streets bike only. We have a big controversy here in San Francisco. I live in the Bay Area, and in San Francisco, there's Golden Gate Park, and there is a bike lane in Golden Gate Park where they took a portion of where cars used to be, and they made it just for bikes. And now people are starting to try and figure out, like, well, is that good for people or bad for people? And there's this, like, big fight. Like, is that fair that people can't drive through that one little part of Golden Gate Park? Or is it worth it that people can? And I think that's going to be the post-pandemic world negotiation is going to be, how many days a week do I have to come into the office? Am I going to be able to eat outside in that parklet where you took over the parking spaces? Is that going to stay, the outdoor dining? And are these bike lanes going to stay? Because people kind of like that. We saw a vision of the world that I think was better. And you know, I'd like to see certain parts of that stay. So I think we should keep an open mind to it.
Yeah. What do you think about business travel, Jason? Do you think business travel is ever going to come back?
I think it's
conferences.
I think it's over for business travel. I'll tell you why. The segment of business travel, I think that's going to be really, really damaged is going to be, I got to go on a sales call. I got to go there to close the deal. That has, because everybody did so much better, with Zoom calls and closing deals. I can't imagine that going to your boss and saying, you know, we have to close this deal. I gotta get to New York. I gotta get to Miami. It's going to be like, but we closed all these deals in the last 14 months from home. So you actually don't have to go. And if you go, you're going to waste, you know, 4 or 5 days. So I always had people who would, I always remember this controversy when I worked at other people's companies and even in some of mine, where there were certain people who would like fly out on a Sunday, you know, work the week in New York, come back on Saturday. But then there were other people who would be like, yeah, I'm going to fly out Monday during the day. I'm going to fly back on Friday during the day. And then I'm going to do 2 days in New York and take a day off. And it was always this like negotiation, like, you know, you're just out of the office too much. And now I think we're just moving to a world where people have seen that you can invest in a startup, my day job, from your desk over Zoom. You can close a deal, even a big one, or you can take a company public. People are taking public companies public over Zoom, right? They're doing the roadshow over video conferencing. So I just don't think that that flies anymore with management. So if people do do it, it's going to be because they really opt into it. And then the thing that I think will be additive is retreats. So now that everybody's being allowed to work from home, and some portion of that will continue, I'd say 30%, if I had to pick a number, 40% of the time and positions will be able to continue at home. But they're going to want to get together and say, hey, let's do a week in Vegas. Let's do a week in San Diego where we get together and do planning for a week. And then everybody goes back to their desk for 4 or 5 months. Then we have everybody get together again in Hawaii. Then you work for 4 months. So I think there's going to be some interesting cadence that happens.
Quarterly offsites are going to be actually offsite. And I agree with you, Jason. I think the notion of I've got to go visit someone for a sales call or a business meeting, it's going to be a hard justification.
Well, Jason, I'll be waiting for the inside.com offsite in Hawaii if you're willing to host that.
I think it's going to happen, Yeah.
So one last point here is ride sharing, right? Because we saw Uber and Lyft drop down, you know, as far as the number of rides they're administering, I think it was about 10% of normal volume, 10 to 25% of normal volume. Since that, it's recovered, but they're struggling to get drivers back to these apps. So I think the drivers for both apps are down by about 40%. Where do you really see the recovery for ride sharing? Do you think with, you know, more people working in the office, it's not going to recover to the level it was before the pandemic? Any thoughts, Jason or Sunny?
Sorry, I'll let you go.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think this is somewhat temporal, right? I think the reason you're seeing this is sort of the downside of the stimulus is that it's for many businesses, not just ride sharing. I think there's a big thing that the fast food companies are saying something similar as well. Restaurants in general are seeing something. So I think the sort of one of the downsides of the way the stimulus package were structured is that it creates this, sort of almost perverse scenario where it's better off to just stay at home than go out and do work because the economics work better in your favor in terms of, you know, your time and energy. I think once that comes to an end, Jason, maybe you know what the timing on the stimulus package is, but like, I think we'll see more of a return to normal there. That's my guess on it. I can't think of anything else.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. You know, when you make it so staying home is as, you know, within 20% or 30%, the same amount of money as going to work. So, you know, if I was making $1,000 a week, if I can make $600, $700, $800 a week staying at home, either unemployment, stimulus, or some combination, or even another class of work I could do, people might take you up on that. And I think this is a very interesting dry run for UBI, Universal Basic Income, where the government gives you free money, which is what we're doing here in the United States. We're giving free money to folks to help them through this incredibly difficult time. But we didn't really think it through, right? We're just like, just give everybody money. And, that can be a challenge because I remember Tesla was reporting and now Uber's reporting and people don't want to come back to work. And I think some people are like, well, I have this stimulus check. I can last for another 6 months without working, or I can work just a little bit, maybe half as much. I want to go enjoy my life. And they have the right to do that. So this is going to be another perfect storm. I got the stimulus check. I want to go spend it. And I want to go out to dinner. I want to have a couple of drinks when I go out to dinner, and I don't want to drive. So I'll take an Uber. Oh, wait a second. The Uber drivers are doing the same thing. They're going out and spending their stimulus money. They're going to see you at the restaurant. They're going to have a couple of drinks. So we're all walking home now, or we're going to have designated drivers. So, it's going to be a little bit of an adjustment period, but capitalism, is a very interesting thing. You know, Amazon raising their minimum wage to $15 in their factories has created massive pressure on the fast food companies. And so this is where inflation might actually, we might start to see it, where Uber rides, Lyft rides, fast food, fast casual food. In order to get people back, they might need to make your Uber ride $2 more, where they might need to make, your hamburger, with your family, and, that $30 meal might be $40. just so they can pay people more so they come out and do that work. So inflation is going to appear. And I don't know, Sonny, what's going on with cars, but my understanding is because of supply chain, maybe the used cars are going up massively in resale value.
Yeah, that's bang on. The used cars are, you know, the supply chain is, you know, you guys have probably read about it, right? There's been really massive mm-hmm. chip shortages across the whole industry, not really isolated to any one company. Right. And, you know, this goes back to sort of one of the earlier comments in the conversation where, you know, people are looking for transportation, people are looking for commercial vehicles so that they can get involved. There's lots of segments of the economy that, you know, need vehicles. And I think the shortage that got caused by the shutdowns last year and then the, you know, shift in priorities in the fabs, I think we're starting to see the impact there. And that's, you know, that's going to linger on for until, you know, you can't turn a chip factory on in you know, one day. And so I think that's what we'll see, you know, probably get fixed in the second half of this year.
Yeah, I think that supply is definitely going to rectify itself. You know, there isn't enough. It's not that people want to buy cars. There's just no supply. When there's not enough supply of new cars, people go to used cars. And then when the reason why, you know, we were talking briefly about rental cars being like $700 a day now in some markets, I think Hawaii's mostly being affected by this, by the way. But some markets, $700 a day rental cars is because of that supply shortage, right? Which is being caused not just because of the production delays that happened during the pandemic, but also microchip shortages. So I think that'll definitely rectify itself as the year goes on. Sonny, real quick, do you think the demand for, you know, cars is going to continue throughout the year? Do you think that's going to tail off toward the end? Any insight there?
Well, yeah, like I think what's sort of happened is there's been a real interesting, you know, intersection, and it wasn't definitely by design, but we've seen, you know, I think three things come together. One is electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you guys probably saw since the last time we spoke, you know, Ford has launched the Mach-E, which has, you know, been a really great entrant into the EV space, which, and, you know, this is a scenario where competition is good, right? Rising tide floats all boats. And so Tesla kicked it off for everyone. And now you're starting to see a bunch of entrants come in. So, you know, we have that push starting to happen. We're also starting to see, you know, cars with more technology. And so just like, you know, we replace other technology in our lives, our phones, our laptops, cars are now getting to that cycle. And if you looked at anything in the Shanghai Auto Show this week and saw anything coming out of it, you'd see a large number of cars which have huge displays, much bigger than anything we've even seen in a Tesla to date, who was, you know, a leader for a long time in sort of infotainment, you know, pillar to pillar displays with all kinds of integrated technologies. And then lastly, we're starting to see some more, you know, advanced driver assist systems. And, you know, those are the type of things that people are looking for in sort of this next generation of technology that really just, you know, happened to be coming out just before the, you know, sort of COVID hit. And now, you know, all that is being worked into the supply chain and, you know, into customers' hands. And it's really exciting to see it all come out. So I really think the demand is going to continue because we're going through that moment, like from flip phones to smartphones, and we're going mm-hmm. through that moment in the automotive industry.
What happens to all the old cars? They just go to emerging markets? Like if everybody starts upgrading to self-driving in EVs because it's so compelling, are they going to do that ahead of schedule because it's such a, you know, awesome offering? Or do you think it'll just be on the normal cadence of replacing your car?
I think there's a couple of different forces that are pushing this, Jason, right? And so let's break it down. So Biden has come out and said that they want to electrify sort of all U.S. fleet vehicles. And so if you think about that, it's a pretty big number. It's, you know, across all the different services within sort of the U.S., you know, federal fleets. And what that does is that creates a push that other companies pick up because of their green initiatives, because they say, hey, you know, we want to offset carbon. And, you know, again, with the Biden administration coming in and going back into the Paris Accord, there's a lot more focus around big corporations. And so that creates one end of push that, you know, creates a whole bunch of new demand for vehicles that come into the marketplace. Some of the vehicles that are going out of those fleets end up in used fleets and other places, because not everybody can afford those vehicles. But I think that trickle creates a better overall footprint, carbon footprint for the country. Ultimately, what you see is, and you know, we saw this even in 2008, there was these programs called Cash for Clunkers, where the government is able to kind of create the appropriate incentive to push the most polluting vehicles out of the fleets. And, you know, some of those get recycled. A lot of vehicle recycling is actually a pretty solid thing. And so you see that happen. And if that's not happening, you see that move to, you know, I guess, second and third world countries.
I see. Well, great insights, Sonny. We're going to move things along here to talking about something you briefly touched upon, automated vehicles. Right after the break here on the Inside Transportation Podcast, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody, I just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
Welcome back to the Inside Transportation Podcast. Sonny Madra joining us from Ford X along with Jason Calcanis. Jumping into the topic of automated vehicles. So after a hands-off approach from the Trump administration, things are shaping up to be a little bit different under Biden as agencies tussle to get more serious about regulating automated vehicle safety. The National Transportation Safety Board, which is an independent U.S. government agency that's responsible for investigating transportation-related accidents, has told the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to more strictly regulate autonomous vehicles and driver assistance technologies. Obviously, over the weekend, we also saw this Tesla crash that received publicity after two men were killed in Texas after they crashed into one of the automaker's vehicles. The car caught fire with neither of the men behind the wheel, but Elon Musk clarified that Autopilot was not engaged and the automaker's full self-driving program was not purchased by this vehicle. Jason, what regulation changes do you think we'll see with automated vehicles in the Biden era? Will more regulation or less regulation hurt or help? Any thoughts there?
Yeah, you know, it's really confounding to me when we have one of these tragedies occur that the press really jumps the gun on it, right? And they start blaming the technology or they start blaming the victims of the accident. And I really think you should wait before speculating, because if you remember, there was somebody using Autopilot in a Tesla years and years ago in a Model S, and it turned out they were watching Harry Potter or some movie while they were driving, and they had the seat reclined and they weren't paying attention. And I guess there were some reports that this person was doing that. Then there was the Apple engineer, and it's very notable because this is a new technology and some people abuse these technologies. If you type in car surfing on YouTube, you will be disturbed to find young people, you know, really risking their lives doing very, very stupid behaviors, like riding on the top of cars, literally climbing out of the cars while they're driving, getting on the roof and then trying to climb back in time. It's really disturbing to watch. And we don't know in this situation yet, but already you had people saying they weren't in the front seat of the car. And I guess some local law enforcement said, hey, we know they weren't in the front seat of the car. I don't know how that's possible that they didn't know that. But to give people an idea of what it would take to not be in the front seat, number one, they would have had to purchase the full self-driving beta.
Which they didn't.
Which, according to Elon, they didn't. And there's no reason for him to say they did if they didn't.
Right.
Then It wasn't engaged. And then there was this report that they had told their wives that they were going to go use the full self-driving feature. So maybe this person didn't know they didn't even have it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a group of, and then how do you know that they actually left the seat? Why would two adult men, you know, who have the ability to afford, you know, a very nice car, leave the driver's seat? That
yeah.
is insane behavior. It's like stunt driving behavior. It's crazy. And so I really encourage people to not make decisions when they don't have the complete information. And this is one of those situations. And people really jump the gun on these. It's very clear when you purchase full self-driving, autopilot, et cetera, that you have to keep your eyes on the road. And in fact, mm-hmm. I've brought this up on this podcast. I've been, and I don't have any stake in Tesla. I don't own Tesla shares. I do own a couple of Tesla cars, and I'm obviously friendly with people who started the company, but I've been using it, and it's gotten more and more sensitive, and it disengages all the time when my hands are on the steering wheel, which is to say they've made it so sensitive now to avoid people doing stupid things that it's actually interfering with people doing it legitimately.
Yeah,
so when I'm driving out to Tahoe or up and down the 280 or take the 5 down to LA from the Bay Area, I put it in self-driving and I have my hands on the wheel, but if I don't move it, it disengages. So they also know if you're sitting in the seat or if you have the seatbelt on. And I've had this experience where I adjusted my seatbelt and it disengaged the self-driving. So you put your seatbelt on. When you take your seatbelt off, it automatically disengages it, which is kind of like protection against stupid people getting out of the seat, which, you know, like there's been one or two videos on YouTube of people doing this. But, you know, newsflash. People will take their Suzuki or Harley Davidson motorcycle and stand on the seat and do acrobatics and risk their lives. People will do that in a Volvo. They'll do it in a GMC. They'll do it in whatever car they happen to be driving.
But if it's a Tesla.
But if it's a Tesla, we
Wall Street Journal
is going to be, which is fine. You know, I think new technology should be under scrutiny. And then I think what we have to do is have this logical risk assessment. How much safer is self-driving and how many accidents are being avoided? And then how many people are doing stupid things with the technology? You can be certain that even with people doing stupid things with technology, whether it's an airplane, a bicycle, a motorcycle, a scooter, whatever, there's going to be, this technology makes it safer overall. The number of times I've had that, even if I don't have autopilot on, you know, it tells you if you change lanes accidentally. And I can tell you, I've accidentally, you know, like all of us when driving, drifted into a lane and boom, it immediately tells you you're drifting into a lane. And, you know, three or four times in the last couple of years, I drifted into a lane and knew about it because the Tesla stopped me.
Yeah. So, Jason, what do you think about regulation? Because Tesla has
the original question.
So Tesla has been able to build this software, right, and just release it out into the wild. Everyone's been using it mostly responsibly, by the way. Let me just clarify that. But do you think it would help or hurt to have some sort of government agency being involved in the creation of these driving softwares?
It does seem like there could be more clarity because there are local rules and then there are federal rules. And so when you're applying regulation, you don't want to have too much regulation so you don't have innovation, but you also don't want it to be the Wild West. The United States is also a very quirky, you know, government structure in that localities have, you know, states have rights, state rights, federalism, all that whole thing. So, you know, we could do a federal, you know, regulation around this, or we could just keep going with the local regulations, because you'll see people will run these self-driving tests in different locations.
Yeah.
Because, and you know, let's face it, some locations are going to be much safer than others. Manhattan is very different than, you know, a suburb of Arizona that was planned with the same size streets, the same, you know, that was built in the last 20 years, as opposed to like the back streets of Boston, you know, that are, you know, all narrow, but there definitely should be more discussion of the data and how safe they are and how much is avoided in addition to when there's accidents,
well,
right?
Just building on that, Jason, like, you know, I think one of the interesting things even about that crash from this past weekend is, you know, almost like the, you know, technology that we see in airplanes, right? That, you know, like the black box, like I think Tesla was able to go in and look at the car and download those things and say, hey, look, like they didn't have these features. They didn't have them turned on. The vehicle didn't even have those things. And so one of the things that I think some form of regulation can bring for the entire industry alongside the safety is some standard way of dissecting what's happening. You know, there's still 30,000 plus, you know, deaths every year in the US related to vehicles. And I think the more that we can understand what was happening with the vehicle and what those things were, I think that creates a safer environment for everyone. And those systems should generally help reduce those numbers. So I think the regulatory aspect can bring some standard rules for everyone, all the different car companies that want to play in this space.
Yeah, and I definitely think, you know, we see all these instances where there are deaths or accidents based on driving technology. But I'm sure even to this point, we've already seen so many lives saved because of something as simple as like collision avoidance, right?
Yep.
But one thing I will say is I hope we see a general framework for this ADAS technology, starting off with standardized language. So here's a fun one. You guys are all familiar with adaptive cruise control, correct?
Sure.
So there's, you know, pretty much every car company has it now. But in the US, adaptive cruise control is also known as smart cruise control, intelligent cruise control, adaptive cruise control with cue assist, dynamic radar cruise control, so traffic aware cruise control. So it really depends on who you buy it from, but the core technology mostly works the same. And, you know, when you think about technology like Super Cruise, full self-driving from Tesla, and now, you know, Blue Cruise, right, from Ford, I think the government has to be more aware of how these technologies are developing and how they're being presented to the public. And then it's also important to kind of document these instances where the technology is causing an accident and have appropriate agencies, you know, look into these incidents and see how they can improve. But like you were saying, Jason, I think it's important to just kind of allow these companies to do what they know best is innovating, creating new technology, taking some of this log data, like Sunny was mentioning, and being able to improve upon that.
It would be great if there were some standardization about this. Yeah. I mean, we have seatbelt standards, we have airbag standards. Sure. Why not have some common lexicon? I mean, there's the branding when you name something, and then there is, you know, as an industry, what we call them. And sure, I mean, some tighter branding around these things and what they are would be good. I always felt that, you know, a possible solution to this, if it was challenging to use these systems, which I'll be totally candid, they're dead simple by design, but it would be also fine if at some point, you know, you could become self-driving certified, I guess, or you could run through a course. So in order to use self-driving, maybe, you know, at your dealership, they will walk you through it. You check like 5 boxes, you sign a document that you understand how to use it. Kind of like taking the terms of service and making them a real world terms of service, where they say, okay, do you understand this? Do you understand this? Check, 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 check. Because right now you just kind of agree and then it gives you feedback in real time. They could add, if this was a serious issue, another layer of friction where you take like a mini course or a mini certification. But it's kind of like annoying that, you know, putting aside this weekend's, you know, tragedy, and we should always, you know, withhold to make sure we understand the facts before we make policy or, you know, grand plans about them. Putting aside this past weekends, it would seem that making everybody who uses self-driving go through extra steps to use it is kind of silly when it's dead simple to use. I mean, it's easier than driving by definition because it's autopilot. So, you know.
Well, I think we were talking to the CEO of Revel Mopeds a few months ago. I think they had a similar situation where they had a few accidents and then they started including a tutorial or like a lesson when people started riding their mopeds. So those are some excellent thoughts, Jason. I mean, that would be a good way to solve it. Obviously, there's a lot of people who know how to use it and they won't need the training. So it'll be, you know, another step in that process, right? Moving things along here, wrapping up the show. We're going to do a quick round of Dope or Nope.
Oh, my favorite.
So the first topic here. Now, obviously, have you experienced high-speed rail before, Jason or Sunny? High-speed rail train systems?
Yeah, when you're traveling Europe and Japan, yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
and China, yeah.
Yeah. So they've invested billions of dollars into constructing these very efficient mass transit systems. In the U.S., we don't have anything like that. But I keep seeing this image that's referred to as the transit meme dream of a potential U.S. high-speed rail map. This map has earned over 185,000 likes on Twitter and over 50,000 retweets. Gen Z hopes the Biden administration will make this high-speed rail system possible. Any thoughts on whether we could actually get to this type of system? Would you want this type of system? Any thoughts, guys?
Want, definitely, yes. I just find it. I think I've been hearing, I've been in California for like, 21 years now, 22 since 99. And I think we were supposed to have a high-speed rail between LA and San Francisco. So when I look at the map that you're talking about that has these, wonderful routes, I find it such a challenge. I think, the coordination of all those states and make all those things work. And, like we've seen in different aspects of life recently, that's what I think would stop it from happening sort of more kind of across the entire country. We may see it within individual states or corridors, but not this dream map. But I want it to happen. I just don't think it will happen.
Yeah. It's amazing how the United States hasn't been able to get this done. And privately, there's supposedly this Brightline West, which is the private LA to Vegas yes. high-speed train. And it would hit top speed of 200 miles per hour, which is kind of lame in and of itself. I mean, there are 250, 350 ones, in Japan and China. And so I think people would go crazy for this. And if you could have a high-speed rail that went to the Central Coast and from the Central Coast to LA and from LA to San Diego, what a game changer. I mean, it would be for California because maybe the middle of California could start to... this Central Coast, as we call it, could have a resurgence, right? And more people would live there if they had easier mobility north and south.
And a slight tangent from that, but I don't know if you saw this, but I think France has banned short haul flights. So anything that can be, I don't know if you guys saw this, it came out last week, but any flight that was under 2 hours or that's you're able to do in under 2 hours on a high speed train, they banned the flight on within France, short-haul flights.
Oh, my Lord. I'm reading this right now. The French government has banned short-haul international internal flights when rail alternatives could cover the journey in 2 hours and 2 hours and 30 minutes or less. See, that's really fascinating because that probably has to do with the carbon footprint and just the damage that these things have. I mean, if you think about it, there's a big debate when you're in LA and you're going to – when you live in Los Angeles, you will debate – 10 times a year, driving to Vegas or flying to Vegas, driving to San Francisco or flying. And every couple of months, somebody actually does a test where two people leave at the same time from the same house. And it basically always winds up that the person flying saves an hour unless there's a delay at the airport and then they arrive at the same time as the person driving. It's this age-old discussion. When I go to LA, I drive because I like to have my car with me and I like to listen to an audiobook. And I think autopilot and the self-driving has a lot to do with it because I feel less fatigue when I'm on autopilot than driving because you don't have to obsess over your speed. You don't have to obsess over the car in front of you because of the adaptive cruise control, and you don't have to worry about staying in the lane because it does all that for you. So I've found I enjoy driving much more because of autopilot and those technologies. And I really think self-driving should become a thing, in the left-hand lane, you should be allowed to use this technology and lock in and then be able to, marginally check your text or, watch a Netflix show because it is that safe. I think that's coming, in the next couple of years. I think in-city driving is a whole different ball of wax. We've talked about this many times.
Yeah. And when you drive from LA to San Francisco, you can stop at that very fancy, I don't know if you've been there, Jason, the Tesla Supercharger in Kettleman City.
Oh, many
have
times.
Have you gone inside?
Of course. It's a beautiful lounge.
Beautiful lounge, coffee bar, all that stuff.
Coffee bar. But you have to pay for the cappuccino. I was like, kind of feel like if I have a Model X or a Model, if I have I should get at least one free coffee. But they have Wi-Fi. They have a kids play area, beautiful clean bathrooms, and like 100 stalls. And some of them are that 250. But what I've realized is, you know, the... Now that cars have hit 300-mile range, I think, is the Mach-E 300 miles? It's 305, right? The long-range one?
I think the long-range one, yeah.
It's 305. So you start to get past 300. I was able to make it back from Tahoe last trip without stopping. And in fact, I stopped to get lunch, and there was I could have stopped at a Tesla supercharger, and I was like, I'm not going to supercharge. It's going to cost me $4, and I don't need to, so I'll just charge when I get home. So I literally avoided the supercharger, and you know, I think we'll have 400, 500 mile cars in the next 2 or 3 years. I think the standard will move from 200 to 400, you know, by 2025. And once they're 400, I don't know about you, Sonny, but there is really very few instances where somebody drives over 400 miles in a day, or if you were even doing 80, not that I'm saying you should, but you do burn obviously more battery when you're going faster. You use more energy, you know, once you, you know, there's very few trips that are going to be more than 300 or 400 miles.
Yeah. And door to door, that advantage, like you talked about, just having your own vehicle, leaving whatever time you want and having, being able to, you know, do a podcast, do calls, listen mm-hmm. to your favorite audiobook. All those things are really incredible. And that's sort of, you know, the technologies in the cars to do that really well. I think it's going to be a game changer. We're going to see a lot of change of behavior because of that.
And you add on to it the pandemic and the fear of catching diseases. Mm-hmm. You know, like if you're driving to LA or driving to Vegas, you just eliminated one of the huge vectors from, you know, putting aside coronavirus, just getting the flu. Every time, I mean, I was a road warrior for many years of my life, and I realized the reason I'm getting sick is because of these flights. I'm in these airports and, you know, constantly going through airports, constantly going through flights and sitting close to people. It's a recipe for getting a cold, right?
Yeah. I don't know if just on that point, like because of how everyone's been acting, but like, I don't know if you saw the end of the flu stats for 2020, but it was like almost like there was no flu.
There was no flu. Yeah. Everybody was quarantined.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I think if anything comes out of this pandemic, that would be good. It would be people stopping shaking hands and washing their hands more often. And if you are sick, wear a mask to help people, you know? So, you know, that's what you see in Japan is people just will wear a mask all the time.
Well, there we go, guys. We're going to wrap things up. We're at the end of the show. A big thank you to our guest, Sonny Madra from Ford X. Whoop, whoop. As always, Jason. And if you want to learn more about Ford X, I believe it's Ford.com. Right?
Yeah, or I think Ford.
I think your website is Ford.com, F-O-R-D.com. This new upstart
FordX.com.
How do you spell this new startup's name? F-O-R-D. You guys still produce non-electric cars, but that's when do you think Ford will be 100% EV? Have you guys made a statement?
I don't think we've made a statement for 100% EV, but there's a huge electrification push, right? The F-150, a Transit's coming later this year. You know, those are the top commercial vehicles in the country. So I think it's going to be really exciting.
The Ford Transit Electric is going to be spectacular. Yeah. I mean, that's just so great for cities. And you guys sell like a million of those a year, right? Yeah. Like that's like a crazy seller.
Yeah, we'll get you one for the fam.
Well, what I would like to do with that Ford Transit is I think a lot of people use those as the conversion platform for
van life.
Van life, right? Yeah. So that's going to be amazing. And you might be able to get extra battery packs in there to make them more long haul. So that would be a great – it's just one thing I never understood about Teslas. You know, they kind of simplified the range, but I wish they always had like a plus where you could add 100 miles if you were a maniac and, you know, weren't price sensitive and just wanted to have that optionality. So – anybody making electric vehicles, always offer like something for the whales, like an extra 100-mile car. I think they're doing well with the Model S Plaid.
That's
a 500-mile version one.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do they do? They put two battery packs in it? I mean, that's an incredible amount of battery life.
Well, Sonny, you have a few cars to send over to Jason because I think he wants the Bronco.
I do want the Bronco.
The Bronco.
Oh, so beautiful.
And the Mach-E.
You know what I'm doing is I'm going to get myself like a, I want to get like a barn and just have all these cars in a barn. I want to start collecting cars.
There we go.
We'll hook you up.
Thank you.
All right.
All right, everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll see you all next week. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.